You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
When it comes to Father's Day, dads want steak. And there's still time to deliver uncompromising quality and flavor with delicious gifts from America's original butcher, Omaha Steaks. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code THANKSDAD when you shop at omahasteaks.com today. Hurry, there's still time to give dad something incredible for the big day. Shop now at omahasteaks.com and get an extra $35 off with code THANKSDAD. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Today on The Grave Talks, ghosts are people too. A conversation with Keith Evans. When a person dies, where does their spirit go? Does it go to heaven or hell? Are they able to return to the earth realm to interact and have their opinion noted on matters that concern them in life? Do we sometimes assume that once a person dies, their personality or priorities change to something much different than they actually were while here? Today, we talk about ghosts and some of the places they've lived and why they may still love it, even in death, with Keith Evans.
It's actually two parts. One was the experience I had when I was 4 years old, and the other was... I'm like an empath. It's not really strong, not enough to write all my paranormal about, but it's enough that I can like feel the emotions. For instance, like if I go into an antique store, I can just, I always feel the happiness that all these antiques brought people. Mm-hmm. And I never knew why I enjoyed going into antique shops or what, why it cheered me up or made me feel better because, you know, I used to collect bottles, but I don't anymore. And I still collect coins a little bit. So the other antiques, I really had not that much of an interest in. So, and my first experience with the paranormal, I didn't even know it was, you know, paranormal. I more or less was 4 years old, and my mother liked to sleep late. She'd get up around 10 or 11 a.m., and I would wake up at 8 o'clock, and I'd be starving. So I woke up one morning, had nothing to do. My mother had a strict rule. I had to stay in bed. I couldn't get up and wander around the house. So the bottom line is I woke up one morning, and one of my aunts, and this was my grandfather's mother's, so they were like great aunts, I guess you could say. My mother didn't get along with them. So one of them came into my room and said, "You want to go see the train wreck?" And the week prior, the adults were talking about a train wreck, which I thought had just happened. And when I've asked them questions about it, they tell me, go play with the kids. And when I was a kid, I wasn't really interested in playing with the other children. I was interested more about anything that the adults were talking about interests me.
Mm-hmm.
So the bottom line was, they wouldn't give me any information. And I thought, my aunt's going to take me to the train wreck. Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm.
But I told her, my mom don't want me to go anyplace with you. And she said, that's okay. We'll be back before she wakes up. So I went because I wanted to see the train wreck. So anyway, she took me to the train wreck. And it was like just where the train had kind of fallen over and kind of wrinkled up in the area where, you know, the Canaan factory used to be, which was like an open air shed, rather large, but an open air shed where they husk corn.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, I looked and we came back. It was a pretty good walk. As I got older, I figured it was about a quarter mile up and a quarter mile back. And I always thought, gosh, as a 4-year-old, I must have been, in pretty good shape to walk that distance. You know, it didn't tire me out or anything. So anyway, she got me back, and, I didn't really think too much about it. When I was 13 years old, I asked my grandfather, I said, you know, the strangest thing about when my aunt took me to the train wreck, my grandfather's ears perked up. You know, like he looked at me like, train wreck, you know?
Yeah.
He didn't say that, but he just looked at me. And I said, the strangest thing about the aunt, it didn't look like my Aunt Virgie or my Aunt Ada. It was like a combination of the two. And he said, well, that would have been my mother. Just like that.
Mm-hmm.
And his mom passed away. I already knew that. His mom had passed away when he was like 8 years old. And then I thought, well, that is strange because, my aunts were still living when I talked to my grandfather. They passed away when they were like in their 80s or late 80s. So they were still living. So I could still look at them and say, neither one of these ladies look like the lady that came into my room when I was 4 years old and took me to the train wreck. Because, you know, when you're a little kid, you want to do something, you pay attention to that person and you say, wow, thank you. You know, it's like that was a big deal.
Yeah.
And I asked my grandfather, I said, well, who do you think it was that took me to the train wreck? And he said, well, that's impossible, Keith, because the train wreck happened before you were born.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of made me think about, you know, the way I was always, you know, when I would go past the old farmhouse, where I lived at the time, a lot of the old farms were just let go. They might still use the barns and the other buildings, but one farmer couldn't farm 60 to 80 acres and make a go of it. So they were more or less, farmers would be buying 3 or 4 farms to try to have, instead of 80 acres, maybe 320 acres to try to make a go at it at farming and make a profit. So there were a lot of farmhouses that they just weren't taking care of because there was no funds to take care of it. And they were large. Most of them had 4 or 5 bedrooms, and most people didn't need that large of a house.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd go by these old homes, and I felt drawn to them, like almost like they were like calling out to me, come here, check us out, look at this home, and try to save this home. And I'd ask my parents to stop, and I'd get out, and I'd kind of hold my hands up, kind of like, years later, I saw that TV program, Monk, and how Monk would always hold his hands up whenever there was he was like feeling or getting an idea or thinking of something.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to do that, maybe not with both hands, but at least one hand, like I was feeling or getting the emotions that these people had. And it was like these farms meant everything to them. This was like not only their family home where their kids grew up and, you know, went to high school and went on to maybe farm at that farm. Some of these farms were held in the same family for many generations, and they were very proud of this. It was also their livelihood and their family business. So I was like feeling all of that. And I was so, in one way, sad because I thought these people want someone to save this house and, you know, not let it go. Not, you know, a lot of them, the roofs were already compromised, and my father would say, once the water gets in, you're going to have termites, and it's not worth saving it. You almost have to tear it down and start over. So anyway, I felt bad because I couldn't help. I couldn't help. I was a child. I couldn't borrow money to buy a house. So anyway, I had that type of empathic abilities. And that's how I got into paranormal. I just noticed these things that other people didn't seem to care about or notice or have feelings about. And my grandfather died shortly after the conversation I had with him about, you know, my aunt coming into the room, which I thought was my aunt. And so I didn't get to talk to him again. I guess we had the conversation when I was maybe 12 or 13, and he died when I was 13. So the bottom line is, I wish I could talk to him more about that. And I would say that if people are having paranormal experiences, they wouldn't even know what's happening. It would just be a nice person. And, you know, when I see a ghost or spirit, which is rare, they look as real as anyone else. Mm-hmm. And I would not know that they were a ghost or spirit. So people might say, oh, I've never had a paranormal experience. They probably had. They just don't know it, you know?
You know, I've always wondered that. I've thrown this out there over the years on the shows of how often are we, for example, when we were going to the mall, you know, walking through a busy shopping center or something of that nature, how often are we encountering something that is paranormal or a spirit that just blends itself right into everyone else, and maybe intentionally, because it doesn't necessarily want to bring attention to itself. It just wants to go and have that experience amongst the living.
Right. And more or less, most ghosts and spirits are not evil or demonic. Mm-hmm. And what you see on TV about every ghost and every spirit being evil and demonic just isn't true. There are good and bad people in the world, and I'm sure there are good and bad spirits. I just haven't run across too many of them, you know. And the ones I do run across, it seems like, I don't know if their intentions would be evil. Mm-hmm. They might, you know, say, like, cause my phone to not work.
Sure.
May not be because they're trying to be evil. It might just be a new toy. They get inside of it and they start to move around, because I feel that all ghosts and spirits are just electromagnetic energy. That's what we are when we pass away. That's our soul. Just like you can see, ECG shows the current running through the brain. EKG shows the current running through the heart. So I think a ghost spirit gets inside of your phone. They move around too quickly. Their energy heats up your phone, and that can cause problems. But I don't think they're doing it intentionally, and I don't think it's evil. And I do feel that it does hurt you when you have to fork out, you know, $200 for a new phone. So it hurts you that way. But I'm not sure if they do it intentionally and if they're doing it to be evil.
Let me ask you this, and we go back to the experiences that you had as a child at that train wreck site, where this ghost aunt, as it was presented, or maybe your would it have been your grandmother or great grandmother that would have been taking you to that wreck site?
It was my grandfather's mother.
Yeah, okay. Did you ever go try and trace those steps back as you got older, trying to go back to that area that you were shown as a child?
Oh, yes. I've walked up that quarter mile area at least maybe three or four times. But it really had less to do with, you know, the paranormal experience than just I lived in that area and that's where I walked. Mm-hmm.
I'm just curious as to the site of the wreck, you know, years later where you were walking there, was there remnants of the wreck that was there? Did you know of the wreck prior to having that experience where your aunt went and showed you? And then, in fact, could you confirm that the wreck did occur there? And was there any deaths or anything with that wreck? Tell me about that.
Well, my grandfather told me that, yes, there was a wreck there, but it happened before I was born. And apparently there was no one that was killed, because it was early in the morning, and there was no one working at the cannon factory. And I lived in Maryland, so in Maryland, corn is mainly, you might have early corn, say as early as June, if the weather prohibits, you know, will allow it.
Mm-hmm.
And you might have late corn as late as maybe August or early September. So the cannon factories are quite seasonal.
Sure.
No one was killed from what my grandfather said. And it happened before I was born. I don't remember when he said it happened, because I was just so amazed that, to me, it was like a cross between a paranormal experience and a travel through time. And of course, it didn't scare me at all, because it just seemed totally normal to me.
Sure.
And at the time, no one would talk to me about it. So no one, if someone had just said, Keith, you can't go see the train wreck, because it happened 20 or 30 years ago. If they had just said that, then I'd have thought, oh, well, how can I go see it then, you know?
Yeah, or the remnants of it, yeah.
Actually talking about it before what I thought was my aunt took me to see it. It had at least been a week, maybe, prior that the grown-ups were talking about the train wreck. And I had no idea why they were talking about something that had happened years prior.
How did you process that? What was going through your mind when those years had gone by, all those years later, and you, in your mind, remember going back and seeing this train wreck just as plain as day, as if this was just a normal, this is part of what happened when you were younger. It was nothing necessarily listed as paranormal in your mind. How were you processing that when that was pointed out to you that there's no way you could have done that?
Well, I was about 12 or 13 when I found that out. So I was kind of happy, because I thought, well, it pretty much verified to me that the paranormal was real. And my grandfather and I didn't talk about it again. But like I say, he passed away shortly after that. So I didn't really get a chance to do any follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents were definitely, don't talk to them about paranormal at all. That was like, with the Army, you're a no-go at this station. So don't even bring it up.
So it was never a conversation that you were able to have with your mom and dad?
No, they didn't want any part of that. They just shut you down right off the bat.
Even years later, did you ever have an opportunity?
No.
So tell me more about your feelings towards homes, towards buildings. It's very interesting. It's a very empathic feeling. A lot of people have that towards people, but there are certain people that have this affection, this affinity that goes much more towards objects or towards buildings, structures, things like that, that had held people, held history, that are in people's memories. Tell me more about what led you down that road, and then eventually to the house that you wrote the book about.
Well, I will say, you more or less take the stone tape theory, which is residual energy concerning paranormal activity. I think the same thing with empath. Whatever someone has loved, like a house, I feel that somehow I'm picking up on what they loved, and I feel the energy of them loving that house is somehow sent into that house, and I still feel that there are ghosts of spirits there that still periodically come back from heaven, travel back and forth, and look after the house. And I think that not only am I picking up on the ghosts of spirits, I think I'm picking up on the energy that they have left on this property, on this house, which allows me to think and feel that, you know, it should be bought and saved and not, you know, allowed to deteriorate. Or, which in the case of the Hayes House, Ghost or People Too, drove me to write a book about the place.
Mm-hmm. When you have that energy that's seemingly left in the house, is it always a conscious energy? Is it always I'm still here in this house that I loved so dearly and put my life into? Or is it just that? Is it just that energy that somehow remains? And then the, you know, the best example I could make would be if, you know, something smells and it can be a good smell. You know, you could bake chocolate chip cookies, you know, every day. And eventually your kitchen is going to start smelling like chocolate chip cookies, whether you are baking them every day or not. And you can look in that oven. You can look everywhere in that house. There's no chocolate chip cookies, but the smell still permeates. Is that the same with human energy just within the walls of a house that, like I said, that's been loved?
I think that the things you feel, like the Stone Tape Theory, may not actually be an active spirit, but I still feel there's both active spirits there. I think any house that was loved by someone who stayed there 20, 30 or more years, say up until the 1970s, people didn't move around a lot. They got married, they bought a house, and they stayed there their whole life. We don't have that anymore, or very rare. So, you know, that type of residual type energy that an impact can feel may go away if people keep moving every 5 to 10 years, you know. Mm-hmm. But if you're in a house where someone has stayed, not only do I feel that their spirit is there, that they travel back and forth from heaven to look after the house like a guardian angel, I still feel that even if their spirit travels back to heaven for whatever reason, if you're in that house, you could still feel the love that they had for that house. And you can still be drawn to that house as an empath and know that there is a ghost of spirit that cared enough about this house that, you know, at the time that I wrote the Hayes House and did my paranormal research there from like 2016 to 2017, the house was about 80 to 90% original. And I'm sad to say today it is not. It was purchased sometime in around 2019, and the new owner stripped a lot of the interior out. And unless he somehow used the parts he stripped out to reestablish a different pattern to the room and the layout, those pieces of wood are gone forever. And it's sad to me. I felt hurt by that. So it's almost like I'm still had that connection with the ghosts and spirits, and I feel whatever feelings they feel, I feel. And so I feel if you get an older home, keep it as original as possible. Don't be removing any of the exterior wood or interior wood unless it's definitely necessary.
Does that play a big role in the haunting, the original pieces of the house being there? Because you see so often, especially on home improvement shows, where, oh, we bought this, you know, 1904 fixer-upper, and, well, we can make this look just like it did. But in the process of doing so, you might as well have just torn the house down and built a replica in some cases, because so much of it is, it's like, well, we took all the walls out and then we discovered that all of the support beams are bad too. So we had to take that. And quite literally, it's like almost every piece of structure that was that house is no more. I mean, all the way down to the windows oftentimes too, because windows are oftentimes not necessarily, if you're wanting to be somewhat energy efficient, you know, old windows are not, unless you're talking about some sort of ornate piece in the house that you just want to keep. Does that affect a haunting of a home when you literally are replacing it all, or does it a haunting stay be and appreciate, I guess, essentially the update, the love that's being shown to a property that would otherwise have just rotted away?
Well, I guess it would depend on the personality of the ghost and the spirit. So I will say this much. I was hoping I could, with my books and my involvement on social media, and hopefully someday a TV show, and my involvement on radio shows, that I could try to get people away from like words like haunting, because haunting is a negative connotation that something bad's going to happen. I would say paranormal activity is a better word, because I've been doing paranormal research primitively one way or another all my life, and I've had mainly good experiences, and probably the worst experience I had was the having to buy a new cell phone, and that was rather recent. And I still don't feel that that was evil or demonic. I think that was just an overactive ghost having a good time in my phone and heating it up too much. But the bottom line is, it depends on the ghost and the spirit. I feel that they like the original, and I almost feel that's what keeps them coming back. And if you change it too much, they may not recognize the home. And if you don't recognize the home and it's not yours anymore, you might stop caring about it. And for anyone that owns an old home, that guardian angel is not only looking after the home, they're looking after you, because you're the one who's in the physical world that can take care of that home. They're in the spiritual world where all they can do is try to manipulate you and try to motivate you to do the right thing, take care of the home, at least in their opinion. Mm-hmm. So I would say that I really worry that if you do take away the original parts of the home, whether it be the interior or exterior, you're diminishing the probability that the ghost or spirit will care about the place and want to come back from heaven and take care of it.
And that's an interesting way that you put that, because quite often we hear stories of people where they believe or are flat out told from the spirits that they're not making a return visit from heaven to visit the house. And I respect anyone's belief of, if that's what you believe, that's fine. I would just say more frequently than not, I hear the story that these people have never left. The spirits have never left the home. They're not coming back from heaven. They are still there. I'm trying to figure out where they're supposed to go next, for lack of a better term, or if they're supposed to just stay there doing what they're doing. Obviously, I understand, you know, Christianity, that sort of belief system would lead you to believe or think that they're coming back from heaven. Is that where you get that mindset or that way of thinking? Explain that to me. How do you come to that conclusion?
Well, I don't base it on any religious belief. I mm-hmm. just base it on my empathic experiences
okay.
and my own non-empathic experiences with ghosts and spirits. Mm-hmm. I feel that if once we pass away, we're electromagnetic energy. Electromagnetic energy can travel the speed of light. So I feel that ghosts and spirits can travel back and forth to wherever they want to go as fast as they want to go. Well, at least the speed of light. So the bottom line is I really don't feel that ghosts and spirits are trapped, or, you know, they can go wherever they want to go. And I know some people will get upset with me if I say, well, I've communicated with one of your relatives, and they'll look at me and get angry and say, oh, no, my relatives got into heaven, so they're not trapped here on earth. Mm-hmm. I don't feel that's the case at all. And I feel that, you know, most ghosts, you know, enjoy their life and whatever they loved in life, like an antique. I think they come back to make sure whoever buys it's not going to maybe give it to a child that pounds it with a hammer or something. They want to protect and make sure that they get the attention of a person who will buy their antique or buy their antique car and take care of it and have enough money to take care of it. So I think that we think about paranormal and whatever we were taught.
Yeah, and we do.
And most adults don't change their minds.
We do very much. And that's always an interesting topic to me, because a lot of times we do go back to what we were taught. And then that seems to be the belief system of, well, here's how it is. And then when that gets questioned or challenged, it's like, oh, good point. I don't know. I really don't know why, you know, why this is what I know, or why this is what I believe to be how it functions. questions. What's interesting to me, and in no way am I coming to you and saying gotcha or I doubt your belief system whatsoever. I totally respect it. I'm just interested in hearing when I throw this at it from all the stories that I hear and all the accounts I hear, how do you interpret it? Because I have one way that I interpret everything, and everyone has their way that they interpret things. And it's fun to mix that up. And it's interesting to hear from someone else, you know, some of these curveballs you get and you go, okay, well, this is a curveball I've been kind of struggling with. How do you make sense of this with the way that you process this stuff? So that's where I'm coming to you on this. And this is an interesting one. And I'm not trying to be offensive to anybody out there, but what you're describing is essentially what I was taught growing up about heaven. I grew up in a Lutheran household and all of that, was that, you know, you go to heaven and it's so good, you don't care to go back. There's no reason to go back. You wouldn't want to go back. You're going to be happy. I don't think there's the option to go back in the dogma and everything that they teach in most of kind of mainstream, if you will, Christianity. I don't know that there usually ever is presented as the option to return to Earth to go check on the baseball cards that you owned that you gave to your grandson, who are now, you know, selling on Craigslist for one third of what they're worth. What you're describing does happen. These sort of things happen. But what you're also describing then is an attitude and a mindset of a ghost or a spirit that cares just as much about their possessions or things that mattered to them in the living world. On the other side, they still care about these things, even if or when they have passed on to heaven, that they would take the time and it's worth it to them to return to have some sort of, or attempt to have some sort of influence on the living. Is that how I'm understanding it?
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
And I respect everyone's opinion, and there are just as many opinions about paranormal as there are,
sure,
know, colors in the rainbow.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I would just like people to learn more about the guardian angels, because I think so many ghosts of spirits are just jaded by people thinking that every ghost of spirit is negative to the point that people are probably chasing away their guardian angels. And I feel that guardian angels are just the arm of God, and they're here to do his work, and they're here to help you as fast as they can. I've had people say that they were, you know, a husband and wife say they were out eating, and all of a sudden they got the strangest idea, we need to go home now, and they didn't know why. So they usually take maybe a couple hours at the restaurant, and they just hurried home. And when they got home, their house was on fire. And, you know, I feel that was the ghost or spirit that loved that house before them. Mm-hmm. Who knows? Maybe if that house is 200 years old, there might have been four sets of ghosts or spirits saying, hey, guess what? You need to get home now.
Sure.
And, you know, I feel that when you have that type of, you know, support from a ghost or a spirit, I hate to see people just say, oh, no, if there's ghosts or spirits, they're evil, and I don't want to have anything to do with them.
Mm-hmm.
That's sad. And I don't want to see people kind of dissing or getting rid of their ghosts or spirits by being negative towards them, where I've noticed that all ghosts and spirits have been really nice to me, far nicer than most people have been.
That wraps up the first part of our conversation with Keith Evans about ghosts are people too. Be sure to check out his book, Hayes House, Ghosts Are People Too, available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. In part two of our conversation, we'll ask Keith, who were the spirits haunting that house that he was so interested in? What kind of evidence did Keith find at the Hayes House while living there after Hurricane Michael? What drove Keith to write the book about the house? And with people moving more frequently, does that lead to an increase or decrease in haunted homes? All of that in part two of our conversations. Until next time for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.